Two hopeful signs about jobs this morning.
Is the economy kicking into higher gear?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, hello, I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York. It's the midday update from Marketplace.org. It is Wednesday, January 5th. Coming up, the GOP takes charge of the HOUSE. One former Soviet state wants you to take a whiff and think of its great scent. And the hazards of coffee and piloting an aircraft.
But first, for month after month now, we've been telling you about anemic employment growth, a jobless recovery in this country. But a couple of reports out today are rays of light on the nation's job market. Payroll services company ADP reported this morning the number of private sector jobs added last month was way up, nearly 300,000 jobs created, three times what was expected. And job placement firm Challenger Gray and Christmas said today the number of planned layoffs last year fell to the lowest level in 13 years. John Challenger is CEO.
That was a very strong number. In fact, the month for December, just 32,000 job cuts, was the lowest monthly job cut total of the year. We saw jobless claims fall below 400,000 for the first time last month. So all in all, the economy seems poised for a better 2011.
On Friday, the Labor Department comes out with what many economists say is the most important indicator of the month, the official December employment report.
Well, let's get some analysis now from Richard DeKayser. He's chief economist at the Parthenon Group, and he's with us from Boston. Good morning.
Good morning.
So first of all, what do you think of these two jobs reports this morning, especially as we wait for Friday's big report from the Labor Department?
Well, I think your previous commentator got it right. Things are looking up, but we need to take some of these numbers a little bit more carefully. First of all, this is the pregame show, as you mentioned yourself.
Right.
The government number, it's the one we see on Friday, that's what everyone cares about, but these are so important that we're talking about them because they are good leading indicators. Now, October saw a huge increase, 172,000 jobs. People were ebullient. Then November saw a modest increase of 39,000. People were in despair. Each of those numbers probably exaggerates reality, first to the upside, then the downside. The truth is somewhere in between, I think. And that's why I just want to caution against taking any single monthly number too accurately. Now, this number we just got from the folks at ADP implies about a 300,000 job gain in the month of December. If we get anywhere close to that, it'll be great. But even if we do, there might be some special factors. Specifically, November saw declining retail employment, which is very unusual. It might have had to do with the late Thanksgiving holiday and the start to the retail season. So let's just take it with a grain of salt. I think it's good news overall, but temper it nonetheless.
All right. Richard DeKayser, thanks for your analysis. He's economist at the Parthenon Group. Thanks so much.
My pleasure.
As Jeremy mentioned, Republicans take control of the House of Representatives today. And with that, the California Congressman Daryl Issa takes the chair of the House Committee on Oversight and Government Reform. Now, ICE is calling for investigations into what he labels government hyper-regulation. From Washington, here's Marketplace's David Gura.
Congressman ICE says he wants to hold dozens of hearings this year. He's listed several targets: the FDA, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the commission that investigated the financial crisis, the Defense Department, and the Obama administration. Republican Tom Davis says that's the chairman's prerogative.
You have broad oversight almost over everything.
Davis led the committee for 4 years when George W. Bush was president. He got some criticism for not holding enough investigations. He says ISA wants to focus on spending and regulations.
Business will like these investigations for the most part, because I think what they're going after is looking at rules and regulations that are hampering businesses' authority to expand and create jobs.
After the midterm elections, ISA expanded his committee's agenda. Critics argue it's too ambitious and too political.
There's clearly a more aggressive oversight that takes place when the committee is run by a chairman of one party and the administration is held by the other party.
Jim Gottlieb was on the committee staff for 10 years.
There clearly is a difference in at least the tone of oversight.
Tom Davis says ISA has to be aware of that, and he may have to exercise some restraint.
You have to pick and choose, I think, your subjects pretty carefully, and you want to be pretty even-handed in the way it's presented.
He says a big audience outside a House hearing room will be paying attention.
The public eventually decides if it's a political witch hunt or if this is worthwhile.
In Washington, I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
MasterCard Advisors Spending Pulse said holiday shopping was robust in December, and that includes all shoppers, whether spending with credit cards or cash.
And U.S. auto sales nudged up last year by 11%, the best showing since the recession. GM reported the sale of its cars in China grew by 29% last year to more than 2 million cars there alone. Why that could affect you and me at the gas pump? Well, that's coming up. You're listening to the Midday Update for Wednesday, January 5th, 2011. I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York. For the latest look at the markets, you can go to the numbers at marketplace.org. Now to the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics at the intersection of the U.S. and the rest of the world?
You may have noticed at the gas station, the price just keeps going up and up. But here we are with a global recovery trying to take hold, and the increasing cost of oil could send that recovery into a tailspin. That's the warning this week from the chief economist over at the International Energy Agency. Fatih Birol says around the world, higher oil prices mean people will be spending more money on gasoline and less money on everything else. Good morning, sir.
Good morning to you, too. Thank you.
We've seen higher oil prices before, though, and the economy seemed to be just steamrolling along. Why are we concerned now?
I mean, the last time we saw this level of prices was in the year 2008. And, of course, the oil prices were not the primary driver of the financial crisis, but they did play a key role in the run-up to the financial crisis by reducing the business and households' income.
This seems sort of like a vicious cycle then. Economic recovery that's demanding more oil, and then that sends the prices up. Are you saying that maybe this is a catch-22, that this could just keep happening over and over?
The age of cheap oil is over, especially if the major consuming nations, such as the United States and China, do not move from an oil-based mobility transportation system to an alternative one.
Do you have any predictions on where we could see, say, a year from now? Where will oil prices be?
By law, I cannot make any forecast, but I hope we do not see the levels that we saw in 2008 because the demand is expected to be very strong. And if the producing countries do not respond by increasing their production, this may well mean higher prices than we have now.
Fatih Birol, chief economist at the International Energy Agency, joining us this morning. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
As you heard just a moment ago, oil demand from the United States and China will have a profound effect on oil supply and price. Marketplace's Elisa Roth reports that it could affect all of us.
Most of China's demand for oil is industrial, to power factories. In the U.S., most of the demand is consumer. We need gas for our cars. Stephen Schork publishes an energy industry newsletter. He says oil is oil, so more demand from China could end up costing us more.
Everything is derivative of oil prices. So as goes, obviously, the price of crude oil, so shall go the price of gasoline.
During the recession, America's demand for oil dropped. But gas prices didn't drop much. That's because China picked up the slack, says Dan Rosen, a consultant who works there. Since then, China's overtaken the U.S. as the world's largest market for cars.
These big Chinese growth numbers for automobiles are important. But what's most significant about them is that there's 300 million more to come over the next couple of decades.
Rosen says it's hard to predict exactly how much all those cars will increase gas prices. One question will be how often Chinese drivers decide to hit the road. I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
One of Sweden's most popular exports, besides cell phones maybe, is IKEA. And in this country, the home furnishings giant has stopped selling common incandescent light bulbs. Marketplace's Eve Tro tried to find out what that means for her IKEA desk lamp.
Can I still buy a bulb for my Yinka lamp at IKEA?
The answer from IKEA Online, sorry, we are unable to locate this item. Seems Yinka's gone the way of the dodo. Not surprising, says Kevin Turf with Enviromedia Marketing, IKEA would quit selling old lamps as it's phased out old bulbs.
It may mean leaving some of their own products behind, but it also presents new sales opportunities.
And he says IKEA is getting ahead of regulation. Many countries have banned incandescent bulbs, and the U.S. will start phasing out the most inefficient ones next year. Kateri Callahan with the Alliance to Save Energy says Americans are buying more efficient bulbs on their own to save on power bills. She expects more announcements like IKEA's.
You're simply going to see a quicker transition because we're going to be getting the junk, if you will, out of the marketplace.
As for my junk, IKEA finally determined it does not have a halogen, CFL, or LED light for the Yinka. But I could buy a new desk lamp called Snoig. I'm Eve Tro for Marketplace.
Well, Jeremy, the country of Lithuania hopes people will buy into their official scent. This country actually has commissioned a French perfume company to produce a scent, right? They worked with this company out of France, and the foreign ministry has been sending out new perfume bottles by the caseload to a bunch of their allies, to Lithuanian troops in Afghanistan. Officials say the fragrance embodies, now listen to this, the wood-burning scent of sandalwood and cedar and musk associated with regional pagan rituals.
That's an interesting idea for a scent.
Yes, it is. I don't know what a pagan ritual smells like, but I guess we'll know now. The new, Jeremy, the new national perfume, by the way, can you guess what it's called?
Pagan.
No. Lithuania.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Wednesday, January 5th in New York. I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Today there are reports the Securities and Exchange Commission is looking into special trading markets for red-hot companies such as Facebook and Twitter. Thing is, these companies are not publicly listed. And yet Facebook this week may raise $1.5 billion from wealthy clients of mega investment bank Goldman Sachs. From Washington, Marketplace's Scott Tong reports.
Goldman Sachs just invested nearly $500 million in Facebook. As part of the deal, Goldman's wealthy clients can get in as well. Each investor reportedly has to decide by Friday whether to put at least $2 million in. In means into a special investment vehicle, where special people get to buy shares of private companies. Michael Goldstein teaches finance at Babson College.
It looks like Goldman and Facebook may be attempting to use the special purpose vehicles to get around the, legally get around, E500 shareholder rule.
That rule says once you have 500 shareholders, you have to give out financial information. Facebook wants investors, but wants to stay private, because going public can be a pain.
It's a whole slew of rules and regulations that suck up a lot of time for CEOs.
Reports say the SEC is considering updating that shareholder rule because of the Facebook case. In Washington, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
If you use Orbitz or Expedia to search for airline tickets, you've probably noticed there are no American Airlines fares on those sites anymore. That's because of a dispute that started last month, and it raises questions about whether airlines are better off flying solo when it comes to online ticket sales. LA Times consumer columnist David Lazarus has been looking into what all of this means for us consumers, and he joins us now with more. Good morning.
Good morning.
So American Airlines leaves Orbitz, then Delta ditches some other travel sites, then Expedia drops American Airlines. What's going on here?
Well, it depends who you ask. If you ask the airlines, they say, look, we're trying to differentiate our products and build our brands. They use the example of the Apple Store versus Best Buy. You go to Best Buy, you see oodles of products from oodles of makers, whereas you go to the Apple Store, you see oodles of products from one maker. The airlines like that. They want that for their own, whereas the travel agents like Orbitz and Expedia say this is an anti-competitive move, and what the airlines are trying to do is limit the amount of information that customers have so it's harder for them to comparison shop.
So that's what the airlines say. That's what the travel agents say. What do you say, David Lazarus?
I say it's all about the do-re-mi. Not surprisingly, you got to follow the money. And in this case, there's a critter called a global distribution system. This is sort of a pre-internet network that was devised so that travel agents would have all the fare information that they require. Well, things are different now in the internet age. And the airlines are trying to cut out these global distribution systems by feeding their own info directly to the travel agents. They have an incentive to do this. this because they have to kick back some of the fare to the travel agent. They also have to kick back some of the fare to the global distribution system. The global distribution system, in turn, kicks back some of the fare to the travel agent. A lot of money is changing hands. So the airlines are saying, why don't we go around them? Whereas the travel agents are saying, let's hang on to our current system because we get a lot of cash from it.
But if they go around them, then passengers like you and me end up having to look everywhere to find the lowest fare.
And that's indeed the case. Right now, for instance, if you want to fly on Southwest, you've got to go only to their site. They don't want to participate in anyone else's play yard. Well, that's going to be the case going forward. What that means for travelers is you'll do a whole lot more mouse work if you want to find that lowest fare, but it'll still be out there.
Well, we'll be looking for them very hard. David Lazarus, consumer columnist for the LA Times. Thanks so much.
Come fly with me.
And finally, Steve, while we're on the subject of airlines, there was a United flight diverted this week en route from Chicago to Germany.
Mm-hmm.
It made an emergency landing in Toronto.
Why?
Why, you may ask? Well, the Canadian Transportation Agency says the pilot spilled a cup of coffee all over the control panel, all over the plane's communication equipment, and it started sending a bunch of emergency warnings to controllers on the ground.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, my only hope is that it also sent an emergency warning to the makers of airline coffee and told them, you know, this quality situation with the coffee on the planes is getting a little dangerous at this point. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
American Public Media.